On this episode, I talk with Dr. Marina Rosenthal, a licensed psychologist that is dedicated to serving couples with high conflict and messy marriages.
Now, conflict in front of kids, I'm totally okay with. We want to be modeling healthy, calm, well-resolved conflict. The sort of thing I always come back to is, like, if you're going to show the fight, you need to show the resolution. Don't just separate and never bring it up again. And that everybody is respectful, safe. It's sort of a well-managed conflict is actually, I think, a perfectly healthy, acceptable thing to show children to an extent. You know, you don't want that to be day in, day out, all that they're seeing. So it's not like a standard of, like, oh, you should never fight in front of your kids. Quite the opposite.
Hi, and welcome to the Parentologist Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Kim. The Parentologist Podcast is a show about everything parenting with a therapeutic twist. Each episode focuses on a variety of relatable topics, including parenting, family, children, relationships, mental health, and pop culture. Hear from a variety of medical professionals, psychological experts, authors, celebrities, and other parents with inspiring stories. You'll feel like you're in the same room with your friends getting all of your questions answered. You'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll learn, and you'll have fun.
Dr. Marina, thank you so much for joining me today on the podcast.
It's so great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So today we're going to be talking about something pretty tough, but also something I think a lot of people experience and a lot of people can relate to, and that is high conflict relationships. That's your specialty, and I've been following you online and looking at your content for a while now, and I couldn't wait to have on the show because I feel like I hear not only as a therapist about high conflict relationships, just with my own clients, and, you know, a lot of times I work with children, but I, you know, hear about what their parents are going through when working with kids that have parents that are arguing all the time or going through a separation, going through a divorce. And I hear it amongst my friends a lot. And I don't know if it's just the day and age we are in and our social climate and things that are going on in the world. And it just seems like a very stressful place to be in, you know, culturally right now. But then I don't know if that's, making that problem worse. What are you seeing as far as in your couples therapy practice? Are you seeing a lot more high conflict relationships now versus maybe 5-10 years ago? And if so, why would that be?
Yeah, interesting question. So, I think that they've probably been here all along, and there's just more language and more visibility of, wow, our relationship is really not what I expected. It really doesn't look on the inside what I'm seeing on the outside of other people's relationships. And there's just so much more out there now for people to gain language and access to resources to start talking about what's happening. So I think it's probably been there all along. People talk about high conflict and mean different things. So when I say high conflict, what I mean is couples who are still together, although certainly you can be in high conflict with anybody, but, you know, my work is around people who are in current committed relationships, not who are divorced, sometimes who are separated and working on it, and who are fighting a lot. Their fights are intense. They get too destructive, sometimes really harmful to people, and resolution is really poor or non-existent. So you might finish a fight and you stop talking about it, but nobody really feels resolved. And there's all these hanging threads that come up later and can just suck you into the next fight.
Right. Right. And like I said, I work with children, but I see it a lot with their parents. And as a therapist, I used to do couples therapy. And honestly, I bless your heart because it was really hard. It is really hard. And my husband, as I mentioned before we started recording, is a psychologist who I know currently works with couples and high conflict couples. And it's difficult. It's really difficult. And even in my own marriage, even with two people who have the tools, who went to school, you know, the doctorate level and have these tools for, you know, marital and family relationships, and we even find our own conflict in our own marriage. So it's definitely, you know, hard. But like you said, there is a lot more information out there and people like yourselves that can, you know, give tips and ways to go get through those moments and, you know, find resolution, you know, like you said. So, and something you mentioned recently I thought was really interesting is that you said that a lot of times you find that people that are in high conflict relationships are often very insightful, intelligent people. Will you expand on that and, you know, just tell everyone who's listening just a little bit more about that and why that might be the case?
Yes. You know, I would say my typical follower on Instagram, but also client, both people are super smart, super self-aware, have often done a lot of personal therapy. They have read all the self-help, and the conflict that they're experiencing, it just doesn't make sense to them. It's like, why is this happening? And actually this becomes like a loop, the snake feeding itself, eating its own head, where it loops in around itself, that, you know, when you believe that you are doing things correctly, it's like, well, I'm using this strategy that I read in a self-help book and it should work, and you're not doing it with me, it's not working. The frustration that can come from that is really intense, because feeling like we're trying and our efforts aren't being seen is just one of the most painful things. And so a lot of the folks that I work with are in these cycles of both people feeling really isolated in the efforts that they're making. They're digging deep. They're like working as hard as they can to fix this problem, and it's not working. And often there's some subtle shifts at, you don't necessarily have to work harder, you can work smarter. But in that moment, when you're like, here I am, I'm showing up, I'm doing the work, and you're not, it's just so painful, and it can feel really hopeless. Like, how do we get out of this hole that we've dug ourselves into?
Yeah. And that is a tough place to be in. And I've been married for over 13 years now, and it's, we go through our ebbs and flows, right? Of, you know, things being okay and tolerable. And you kind of go through those little, I don't say call them ruts. I feel like that's not really the appropriate word for this, but at the same time, you go through those peaks and those valleys together. And sometimes, you know, like, oh, we have a great marriage and things are going well. And, you know, a couple months later, you feel yourself slipping. And, you know, then you go through this period of time where you're constantly arguing and you can't agree. So I know what that's like, even from a personal standpoint. What would you tell a couple, or even one of the partners that comes to you and says that their one partner or spouse sees their relationship completely differently than the other? So let's wait. One partner says, things are actually okay. Things are going well. You know, I don't feel like I need to, you know, go to therapy, or we're not on the verge of separation or divorce. And then the other partner is thinking, what is going on? Like, they see things, their marriage and their relationship, from a completely different standpoint and think, we've had problems for years, and, you know, I'm ready to divorce you because I haven't been unhappy for years. And they're just in a completely different universes, it seems like. Does that happen? Do you see that often? And if so, what would you suggest and recommend to them?
You know, I will definitely speak to that. What's actually super funny is I don't see that very often, because the people I see, it's like the house is burning down, and right, everybody is aware that the house is burning down because it's burning down right in front of you. But I think, you know, before I saw so many super high conflict folks, that was more common. And, you know, the thing I would generally say is like, listen, this is a team, this is a system, you're in this together. If one of you is not okay, none of you are okay. So we really have to listen to those SOS cues from our partners, because if you don't, they might not be your partner anymore.
Right. That is true. And we're going to get to that, on how to get to a place where it can be in a more peaceful, you know, setting. I know a question that comes up a lot from listeners and, you know, people that I work with professionally and talk to personally, always have the question of, when do you stay together? When do you not? And should you stay together for the kids? Is it healthier to get a divorce and go through all of that conflict? You know, is it better for them in the long run than seeing the constant arguing and fighting and things like that? So what would you speak to on that, when couples come to you and say, you know, we have these children, we have a home, we've built this life together, it's not easy just to say goodbye, you know, when the kids are involved. What is your suggestions about that?
Yeah, it's so nuanced. And I think this is where sometimes like social media doesn't do this topic justice, because it's just really complicated. I think it's completely reasonable to have your children, your home, the life you've built, be one really important reason you want to salvage the relationship. I don't see it working well as the only reason. If that is the only reason you're staying, is because of the kids, because, you know, frankly, it would be expensive to divorce, that typically doesn't work out well. It's just not enough reason to stay and like be with somebody intimately, romantically. So I think it's a good reason, but it's not enough of a reason. I think a lot, despite the fact that I don't work with kids, I think a lot about my couple's kids. They're in many ways, they're like in the room with me, because often what happens is kids are seeing more than their grownups are aware. They're aware of the tension. They're aware of the fighting. And it comes out in behavioral issues for the kids. It's showing up in, you know, kind of kid level symptoms. And then these parents who are fighting with each other focus on the child. They problematize the child and maybe get them really good resources and you know, are focusing all this energy into how do we help this kid. And meanwhile, they're still maintaining the context in which those symptoms are coming up for the child. And so I really see the work that I do as like a way to pull back and be like, yeah, totally, let's get those resources for your kiddo. But nobody's going to be okay if this is the way that fights look in your house, if this is the intensity of the conflict that you're having. Now, conflict in front of kids, I'm totally okay with. We want to be modeling healthy, calm, well-resolved conflict. You know, the sort of thing I always come back to is like, if you're going to show the fight, you need to show the resolution. Don't just separate and never bring it up again. And that everybody is respectful, safe. It's sort of a well-managed conflict is actually, I think, a perfectly healthy, acceptable thing to show children to an extent. You know, you don't want that to be day in, day out, all that they're seeing. So it's not like a standard of like, oh, you should never fight in front of your kids. Quite the opposite. But my clientele, high conflict couples, are having unmanaged fights that are scary, you know, emotionally scary. Sometimes even if everybody is physically safe, like a kid might know that, either partner might not know that. It might not be clear when somebody, you know, slams a door really hard or, you know, slams their hand down on a table that that's actually safe. Your body doesn't know that that's safe. And so we have to really lock down those escalated behaviors and get systems in place to prevent them from happening ever, period, for your own safety and also for your kiddo's safety.
Yeah, that's very important. Trying to think of where to go next because I have so many questions for you and just depending what direction I want to go in. But I know, you know, another question that comes up a lot is when do you know when to call it quits? You know, kids or no kids, when do you know this is the time? Like this is when we need to just pull the trigger and, you know, call an attorney and start the divorce process or move out and start the separation process. There probably isn't one sign, you know, it like you said, it probably leads up to all different things because by the time you get to that point, it might be months or years in the making. But in your work, what do you see is kind of that one, that icing on the cake, if you will, of when to actually say, okay, this is not going to work. It hasn't been working. I know it's never going to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the first thing I want to say is wanting to leave is enough of a reason. If one person is done, they don't have to justify that with things being bad enough. I'm not somebody who has an agenda about, you know, saying you should stay married because you got married. That's up to you. That's just not something that I am going to push as a value. A lot of people want to stay married. It's very upsetting to think about, you know, separating, divorcing, whatever it might be. And so that's coming from them. And of course, it does really depend on the context. But the thing I see most often is that when there is nothing good left, when there's not anything in the relationship dynamic, not just we have a nice house or we, you know, have a good life together when we look outward, but you can't have moments of play together. You don't like your partner anymore. It seems as though they do not like you, not just during conflict, but day in, day out, sort of that extreme contempt and like really just scorn toward the other person, it is really hard to come back from that. And very often that's covering up a whole lot of pain. It's a wounded stance, but it's still really hard to come back from when there's just nothing left to fight for. We have to have something on the table that's worth fighting for in order to put the effort in to salvage a really broken relationship.
Right. And, you know, I'm sure we both study this in school, but we hear about John Gottman and his four horsemen. And, you know, you brought up contempt, defensiveness is another one, criticism, stonewalling. What do you think is the most dangerous in a relationship? And I mean, gosh, if you have all four, then I guess you're pretty in a pretty bad spot. But, you know, when it comes to those things, you said it's hard to come back from, but is there a possibility of coming back from those, especially if more than one is present? And what do you think is the hardest one to come back from, you know, from at least those four?
Yeah, well, I think all the four horsemen are going to be present in every marriage, right? These are things that exist on a spectrum, and it's easy to start applying this framework really rigidly, like, that was defensiveness. We're not allowed to be defensive. Everybody gets defensive. Everybody shows, you know, criticism sometimes toward their partner. That is just like being a human person in a relationship. Long-term relationships are messy and can get intense. It's sort of a matter of the degree, right? If like your relationship is primarily horsemen riding around, that gets a lot trickier. There's just a lot more work, and typically it's self-work, right? Because even if your partner is being incredibly critical of you, you're probably doing some of that too. And so starting with yourself and figuring out like, how am I showing up and how do I correct my role in the cycle is really hard work when you have somebody also coming at you with a really stiff stance, with you know, a lot of rigidity, sternness, who's not, you know, being friendly toward you. I do think contempt is the real you know, nail in the coffin, and not, again, not at the lower levels, not at the sort of like moment to moment that was a contemptuous remark or that stance was a bit contemptuous, but when there is that just sort of like pervasive scorn where there's devaluing of the other person, that's hard to come back from, because how do you then create vulnerability and intimacy with somebody who seemingly sees you primarily as, you know, like pathetic? That's not going to be an easy path.
Right. I know one thing I struggle with personally, and I'll make this about myself, is defensiveness. And it's probably a coping mechanism I learned growing up with my own family system and my own parents and things like that, that, you know, trickle into my own marriage now and whatnot. But that's the one thing I know my husband says that I struggle with is defensiveness. And sometimes I don't even know I'm doing it, because I'll, in my head, I'm thinking, oh, I'm answering his question about something. I'm explaining where I'm coming from and trying to share my perspective on it. Or if he calls me out on something, I'm like, oh yeah, I didn't mean it that way. This is what I was trying to do. And then, you know, he constantly says I'm defensive. And I really don't even think I am or try to be. So how does someone like myself, you know, even realize they're contributing negativity to the relationship when they don't even know they're doing it or don't even mean to? Because then a lot of times, then I'll just shut down and be quiet and I won't even respond, because I'll think, oh, anything that comes out of my mouth is going to be defensive. And I can't do that because I don't want to make the conflict worse. So is there any help for me, or how can I learn how to not be defensive, you know? Or like, how do I even know I'm even doing it? Or do you have any suggestions for other people who are like me that need maybe a prompt, you know, with some I statements or something where it can sound less defensive? Even though to me, I feel like I'm just explaining myself. I'm just sharing my perspective, but I guess it comes off more defensive. Do you see that a lot, or is it just me I'm struggling with?
No, it's definitely not just you. I think, you know, again, everybody gets defensive, right? So this is not something we're going to eliminate. It's just a matter, kind of like a mindfulness practice of like noticing it when it happens. And sometimes we don't change it, right? It's like, there it is. There blows defensiveness. Like that's how I'm responding right now. Interesting. And being able to be aware that that's what's happening, even if you're like, and that's what I'm going to do. Today is a defensive day. That's how it's going down. That building of awareness is kind of the first step. And maybe at first it's after the fact, right? Like if my partner says I'm being defensive, which he absolutely has said to me, like to hear that and be like, you know what? I probably am. I might not see it yet, but if you're experiencing me that way, I probably am. And there might be reasons for why I'm showing up that way that I really want to explain to you right now. But like, let's just start there with the acknowledgement that that perception you're having of me probably has some validity, rather than like, no, I'm not being defensive. I'm just explaining myself and doubling down on the defensiveness. So like taking the feedback, noticing it live, you know, the dream world obviously is to be able to notice it in the moment and then course correct of like, oh, I was feeling defensive just now. Let me try again. Can I just hear what you want to tell me? And maybe ask, like, would it be helpful if I shared like my reasoning behind why I did X, Y, Z, or do you just want to vent to me and then you'll be over it? Because often that's what's going on, is the other person wants to be able to say, hey, that thing you did, that was annoying. And for you to be like, yeah, I get that. That could have been annoying. You're right. And to move on.
Okay, I'm going to have your voice in my ear every time that comes up. I'm going to replay this part of this episode over and over again until I can start actually saying it. Because sometimes in the moment, I want to say the right thing, like what you just mentioned, and I forget. So I need to like write it down, memorize it. You know, I don't know if that's helpful for some of your couples. I know back in the day when I was doing couples therapy, they would do that. Some of my clients would actually write like the I statement prompts or different prompts down. And so when that time came, it would be, you know, more natural for them to say it, and they weren't thinking in the moment, how am I supposed to respond? And, you know, it was like anxiety provoking to respond to a partner that was mad at them and, you know, to do that. So I don't know if it's helpful for anybody else, but I think I might write those down and just practice those. Because I feel like if you practice them in the calm moments, then when the anxiety provoking argumentative moments come, it'll come to you more naturally than you forgetting in the moment and then acting in that defensive way. So I don't know if that helps or if you see people do that, but that, I think that might help me.
Absolutely. I sometimes call that like an SOS note, where you have a note in your phone and it's great to whip that out. Like, oh, something's coming up for me. Let me pull out that note, you know, that we made in couples therapy or from all of the Instagram posts that I've shared with you, and just give me a hot second to decide how I want to respond, because I'm getting a little activated. Like, there's so much right now, and I think this might be a parallel you experience in the parenting world. There's so much content, right? We're consuming so much self-help, advice, informational, educational content. And really what we need to do is practice it, not read more and hear the same things or variations of the same things over and over again, but to like start living them. And so that gap between learning about it and being like, oh, cool idea, and doing it often is something like a note in your phone, a sticky note on the fridge, a hand signal like, hey, when I do this, we're going to pause and make sure that we remind ourselves of how we want to approach these situations.
And I think that's the most important thing to remember for anyone listening is the pause. Pauses are so effective, whether it's in a marital, partner relationship, whether it's even, you know, with your own family system and your own parents, you know, or as a parent yourself and you're working with your kids or, you know, having an argument or just a conflict with your children, of parents being able to pause and then parents teaching their children how to pause. Like you said, with, you know, it's okay to fight in front of your kids, but it's also helpful to have that resolution too. And I think that helps in any relationship, which leads me to my next question, is something that I wanted to compliment you on before I actually ask you my question, is that you said relationships don't have to be disposable. You said that on, it's actually a pinned comment or a pinned post that's on your Instagram. And that even if the relationship is dysfunctional and high conflict, that doesn't mean it has to be disposable. So that being said, what would be the first step a couple can take to make amends with each other? What is the first thing of a couple should do, whether they're in therapy or not, to start moving towards a more positive relationship? If they're in such high conflict, where do they even start? If they feel like they're at the pit of despair, like how do they start coming up? What would be the first step?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you. I've been noodling over those ideas a lot. The idea that we can have everything in a long-term relationship, you know, it's just not realistic. I think sometimes we want all the perks of that long-term commitment, but we don't want the investment and the challenges that come with it. It's a little dose of realism. Like this is the type of work that long commitments require. When things are terrible and you want to take a step forward, I can think of really kind of two concrete things that can help. One is voicing that commitment to your partner. Most of us are so starved for hearing a partner say like, hey, I'm in this with you. Like, I'm not going anywhere. I know things have been tough, but I'm here and I'm going to keep working on this. And I believe we are going to figure it out, even if it's difficult. Like, I am here. Is really reassuring, and not following that up with, but things have got to change. Like, this is intolerable, right? We so often undermine really reassuring statements with a bunch of not reassuring statements. So to purely just offer that can be really helpful and kind of like set a fresh tone in one moment. And then the feedback that no one wants to hear, like truly no one wants to hear this. It's not the fun, sexy feedback, but the way to start changing your relationship is to start changing the way you show up. And most people I speak to really strongly believe that they are already doing this. They've already done it. They shouldn't have to do it anymore. It's like, I have done my part. And the reality is their partner is not experiencing them that way. So whatever it is you think you're doing, it's not working, right? So circling back to, okay, I tried that I statement thing and it didn't work. Well, what happened? You know, like getting really curious about what went on in an interaction for yourself. Very often we try something constructive, like, okay, I'm going to speak for myself. I'm going to say, I felt really frustrated when you, you know, didn't do the dishes last night. That really bothered me. I felt frustrated and I wanted to tell you. And then we immediately undermine it with some of those four horsemen, with an attack. We do the I statement, maybe not perfectly, then kind of slash it down, and then are shocked when partner doesn't appreciate this approach. It's like, I used my I statement. What's your problem? So getting really curious about, okay, yeah, I did do that thing I've been working on, but then afterward, I did 15 unhelpful things. So that's probably why they didn't like it so much. That persistence of continuing to show up with useful, constructive communication. So yeah, the boring but real advice is that we have to start with ourselves. You cannot control your partner. There's nothing magic I can tell your partner that's going to make them change. We just have to start showing up differently.
Yes, I agree with that. Now, if you've had years of conflict, how do you suggest couples get rid of those past hurts and grudges in order to move on? I feel like a lot of couples I talk to live in the past and they keep re-bringing up things that happened 5 years ago, 4 years ago, 6 months ago. And, you know, how do they move forward and stay in the present and move on to the future versus rehashing the past at every argument or saying, well, this has been happening for years and I know it's never going to change. And, you know, kind of having those overarching statements. I mean, are those past hurts able to, I mean, you can't forget them. I mean, we have our memories, right? And we can't actually forget those things. But could we forgive and move on? Is that even possible after years of high conflict?
It's totally possible. You know, I think a lot of the time when we bring up something from the past, it reflects either that it was poorly resolved when it happened. So it happened, but it didn't get processed. You didn't feel heard around it. It kept happening. So it's actually not the past. It's the present. Is one way that I see that playing out. Or you are so dysregulated that your brain is just primed to remember every terrible moment. And those are kind of the two things where it's like either it didn't actually get resolved, so we need to resolve it. And in that case, it sometimes does make sense for big ticket items, big, painful historical events to circle back and process them. Or it was resolved and we have put that to bed. But this is just kind of how our brains and emotional systems work, is that when you're super activated and feeling a really strong emotion of anger or hurt or betrayal, your brain will scavenge up all those other moments when you felt the same. And so being able to differentiate, like, yes, I did feel that then, and I do feel that now, but they're not the same moment, and I don't have to choose to go back there.
Right. I love that. You have such great advice. I feel like I could talk to you all day. Two more questions. I know we're starting to wrap up a little bit here, but how healthy is it for partners to use divorce as either a threat or just anytime there's an argument, that's their first go-to? Well, we should just get divorced instead of trying to, like you said, you know, make a resolution or find some resolution. Especially if, let's say, the partner that's bringing up divorce comes from a long line of divorced families, right? And maybe the person that never thinks about divorce comes from a long line of people staying together, even if they weren't 100% happy all the time, but they're together. So they have two very different backgrounds, and perspectives on life and marriage and relationships and things like that. What are your thoughts about that? Is, like I said, using divorce as a threat, or just bringing it up at almost every argument, you know, saying, well, we should just get divorced. And instead of saying, hey, let's work on this. We want to be together, you know, let's put the work in, let's show up, you know, and find that resolution. I don't know where my question even is, but do you find like that's healthy, or do you have a suggestion of what they can do instead, or approach their partner of saying, hey, you know, I know you come from a long line of divorced families and that's kind of your go-to, but is there a way that we can have an argument without you bringing that up?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that really can't be a tool in conflict. And this is one of the characteristics of a high conflict relationship, is that you're so desperate to get out of this fight. It's so painful, whatever is happening, that the strategies being used get more and more kind of unhinged. And this is where you get really escalated behavior and threatening to divorce or to split up or, you know, other really any threat is never going to be a healthy option. It's usually meant constructively. Like usually the person who said, I think this might not work, we might have to get divorced. Most of the time, they're not doing it to be a jerk. They are doing it because they're feeling so hopeless in that moment. And all the things they tried in this conversation didn't work. And so now they're resorting to that. So we need better tools so that that's not in your playbook of things that you resort to during conflict. You know, it's always okay to end a relationship for, again, whatever reason you want, right? We're autonomous adults. But it's a conversation that should be had extremely selectively in a non-escalated moment when you really mean it, right? Like when you've slept on it and have thought through, this is something I want to bring up. It kind of can't be unsaid. That's very much the purview of the clientele that I work with is like, when you say certain things, your partner is never going to forget it. And so we need to minimize how often we say those unforgettable things because they do a lot of harm. They create a lot of scar tissue. So I think we don't want any threats in general. Threats are not good. I understand the impulse. I really do. And being able to talk about that emotional experience is always going to be the better bet. Like, I just feel so hopeless right now. That still is probably going to be heard with some pain, but it is not as scary as we need to divorce. Being able to elaborate on your emotional experience usually is the more helpful option.
Yes, I agree. So let's talk about hope. Let's talk about resolution. How can couples find resolution when they find themselves in these high conflict relationships? And what is their hope? What can they look forward to? I mean, can couples come out of it and, you know, have a thriving relationship? And, you know, I just want to end on a happy, more positive note. I mean, life isn't always happy. Life isn't always fair. And there is going to be conflict in our lives no matter where we turn. But what do you find is most helpful when it comes to finding resolution with your partner or spouse and, you know, that hope that they can look forward to?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely possible. You know, I wouldn't help people. I don't help people where I don't think there's hope. So that's part of an assessment process in couples therapy is like, is this suitable for this work? Or are you two really more so headed to mediation and you're on the way out? But yeah, I have seen some incredible success stories of people shifting the way they fight. And part of this is a mindset shift that conflict is normal. Conflict is healthy. It's reasonable to fight. We have to eliminate those escalated, scary behaviors. Those aren't cool. But being able to tolerate some of the natural friction in relationships, some of the ups and downs, it's kind of a paradox because when we can cope with and accept and sort of wrap our arms around the bumpiness, the messiness of a relationship, then you're able to see a hard moment where it's like, oh, I really didn't feel like they listened to me, or that conversation did not go the way that I wanted it to. You can see that in context, in this bigger painting or picture of what your total relationship is like. So often a really bad fight, it's tunnel vision. You're zoomed in on this one moment. And it's like, well, if we pulled back, what does it actually look like? So often that's what success is being able to zoom out in those moments and see like, hey, this is just one moment. This is just one feeling. It's not going to last forever. And when it passes, what sort of life are we building together? What are we doing when we're not fighting? That I think is often what hope looks like. It's not eliminating fights. And for high conflict relationships, not always, but often, these are never going to be the like never fight, super like even keeled people. And I really relate to that because I'm not a super even keeled person. I have a temper and I don't have a high conflict relationship at all. It's just not something that I experience, but I could. I sure could. You know, I see that in myself all the time where I'm like, I could level that up to 100 and I know just how to do it, but I'm not going to do that. And being able to weather those moments and have enough kind of like identity to know like, yeah, I run hot. Sometimes I get really hyper-focused in the moment and that's not the whole picture. So like, let's cool off and see how it looks and we'll go from there.
I love that. I love that we could end on a hopeful note for couples that are experiencing high conflict. Where can people find you to get more information, to follow along and take part of, you know, any of your content and resources and things like that?
Absolutely. So on Instagram, I'm Dr. Marina Rosenthal, and my website is drmarinarosenthal.com. I have a couple freebies on my website that are just right there on the homepage. And then I also do sell like a very affordably priced guide to taking a break. We talked about the importance of pausing in conflict. I am so passionate about that, so much so that I like wrote a whole guide about it, because I think it's something couples are told. Like, almost everybody knows you're supposed to take a break during conflict, but then they try it and it doesn't work and then they give up. And so I wanted to address all of the reasons why it's not working for you. So that's just like a very practical, we need to have less dysfunctional conflict in our relationship right now resource that is available.
I love that. Well, I hope everyone who's listening goes and finds you and follows you, and that you can help bring more hope into some of these high conflict relationships. Thank you again, Dr. Marina, for being here.
Thank you so much. It was great to talk.
Thank you for joining me today. I cannot wait for you to listen to more episodes. If you are a new listener, I recommend starting at my Best of Year One episode first. Then make sure to subscribe so you don't miss a thing. And when you love an episode, please leave a review. And if you want to stay connected between episodes, please visit me on social media at The Parentologist and on my blog at theparentologist.com. This podcast is not intended to be a replacement for therapy. If you or someone you know is in crisis, please call 911.